Welcome to the Flow Tracing Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:37 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is June 5th, and I thought we'd kick off today with Brent crude. So over the weekend, we had OPEC Plus saying that they're going to cut an additional $1 million of supply, and that their production cuts are going to last into 2024. So we had the initial pop on the upside, and prices had been rallying in advance of the announcement. And then we saw that prices did not hold it. In fact, if you look at the intraday chart, we can see that the initial strength was basically faded all the way through the day, and it closed on the low of the day. So there is obviously something else at work here. I think it is important to look also at the weekly chart, because there is a quite clear sequence of lower major rally highs. This is still a medium-term downtrend until that sequence is broken with a clear and sustained move to the upside. Then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And the price is still encountering resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So prices got almost up to test that $80 area. And $80.90 is the stated number for the Saudi Arabian government to balance its budget. So they're doing what they can to try and sustain prices around that level, but not a great deal of success just yet. And they did leave the door open to further supply cuts. But the big picture, of course, is that what's going to happen with global demand? On the one hand, you have the Chinese economy, which is slowing down. And then you have interest rates that have jumped higher in North America, in Europe, in Asia, Latin America, globally. So global liquidity conditions are tightening. Economic growth is faltering. And the big question is, what does that mean for oil demand? And the price trend tells us that it's not good. When we think then about what's going on in China, something that I think is rather interesting is that we've had a great deal of commentary about the Chinese reopening, the end of 3 years of lockdown, and what that would mean in terms of a big reflation of the Chinese economy. But the stock market's not reflecting that. We had an initial bounce from the lows at the in the fourth quarter of last year. And now subsequently the price is rolling over. So that's not reflective of Chinese investors investing in their own stock market on the expectation that there's going to be a big reflation. And if we simply then look at the H share index in Hong Kong, well, we did have the good rebound from the fourth quarter into just the beginning of this year. And then subsequently, the price has pulled back. Now, it was well off the low last week, and it was in mildly positive territory this week. But what we definitely saw was that foreign investors were looking for proxies to try and play the Chinese reopening, and they certainly favored Hermes International. So the price went from 1,000 to 2,000 euro and has subsequently pulled back in quite the dynamic manner. So I think it is more likely than not that this is a peak of at least near term, quite possibly medium term significance. A reversion to the mean looks more likely than not, and potentially that mean could be the 1,000 day moving average. And that, of course, will depend very much on what actually happens in terms of Chinese growth and expansion of credit. And, of course, what that will then hinge on is how much support are they going to offer the property developers. So we can think about the fact that the shares like Country Garden Holdings continue to trend downwards. And one that has significant bond maturities in this quarter is Poly Development. And this is also one of the state-owned enterprises. So it has not collapsed in nearly the same way as the private property developers, but it is struggling in the short term to find support and still has the sequence of lower rally highs. China Vanke has a great deal of debt that it will need to refinance in the third or fourth quarter of this year and into the first quarter of next year. And the share is barely steady in the region of its lows from late last year. So it's more likely than not that the Chinese government are going to stimulate. But they're very conscious of the fact that the price-to-income ratios for Chinese property are extraordinarily high, and any effort to reflate the property bubble is simply going to make social problems even worse. And there have already been rather vocal protests about the property market and the fact that people have made down payments and not received or even had the properties built. So these are obviously problems that will need to be resolved, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be the same swell of new money printed as we've had in the past. And I think that is also one of the contributing factors in copper prices not doing better. Now, the price is steadier and it has rallied back up to test the region of the 200-day moving average over the last 10 sessions. So now this question arises: are we going to see outsized demand for copper as a result of the build-out of alternative energy and electric vehicles? And that's quite possible. Will that then translate into a much higher price for copper? Well, then that is going to depend on what happens to the Chinese economy, since it's half of all Chinese, excuse me, copper demand. And that's why the price, having steadied, isn't going up in nearly the same kind of dynamic manner that we saw, for example, in the run-up in prices from the middle of 2022 to the beginning of this year. I think that medium term, there is a clear bullish trajectory for copper. But short term, over, and I think of that from now, anything out to about 6 months, we could get quite a bit of volatility. Now, when I look at the big round numbers where Hermes jumped from 1,000 to 2,000 euro, I do think about Apple. And I did initiate a short position here today by buying at the money puts with January 2024 maturities. So the share is running up towards the 2,000, excuse me, the $200 level, and got up to test the 3 trillion mark earlier on today. But it's finishing in negative territory. And I do think that this kind of move, where it has not quite made or fulfilled the characteristic of the downside key because it did not close below the low of the previous day, but that's a lot of volatility. And it was in response to a big new product launch. Now, I watched at least part of the presentation, and they didn't talk about eye strain. And I think that is far and away the biggest hurdle to widespread adoption. And it might not even be about widespread adoption, but widespread usage, because you can't really use these glasses for more than half an hour at a time. But what they've basically done is incorporated a lot of the hardware, software, and the better pieces of technology associated with enhancements to virtual reality over the last several years. So the glasses can be controlled with hand gestures without the use of a controller. And that is technology that was developed several years ago, and Apple has incorporated it into their headset. And there'll be a suite of apps, and it's certainly a nice complete package that looks very similar to an iPad or an iPhone. But that still does not get around the cost or how long in the day can someone use it for without having eye strain, disorientation, or feelings of seasickness. And This is, I think, problematic that they didn't really announce anything that solved some of those rather persistent problems with both augmented reality and virtual reality. Now, the share had rallied spectacularly to get up to these levels, and having rebounded so emphatically from the 1,000-day moving average, I think that there is the possibility that we're going to have a failed upside break, and I thought that this wasn't a bad time to reinitiate a short position. Now, I know that I cl was closed out of my NASDAQ short last week, and I took the loss on that, and I guess that was temporarily the right decision. But I do think that we're very overbought in the short term, and that the NASDAQ is at it's pulled back rather significantly between in 2022, rebounded very emphatically in 2023 so far, and this is eerily similar to the same kind of performance that we had in 1999. So I think that it's certainly worth paying attention to. Then the semiconductors sector, it went straight up for 3 consecutive weeks, and it was a little bit softer in here today. So a lot of the promise around artificial intelligence is very much reliant on the build-out of data centers, and the cost has got to be borne by someone. How long is it, or how long will we have free AI products for? And when will they start charging for it? How much will they charge? Or what will be the business model that will allow them to continue to be free? Will they adopt a marketing model? But of course, the problem is that the way Google works, for example, is you put in your search query. And I think at this stage, most people are aware that the bulk of the top 3 or 4 results are paid for advertising. And you definitely get the kinds of sponsored links at the top of the page. And sometimes you've got to scroll down quite a bit. Just type in the word insurance company into the Google. The Google search, and you might have to scroll really quite a long way before you find the search result. But how do you do that with ChatGPT? When you ask it a query and you ask it to help you write, how do they serve you advertising doing that? Do they say, well, the answer to this question was sponsored by Coca-Cola, and if you ask what's the best drink or write me a review of a fizzy drink, will it say, well, Coca-Cola is obviously the best one, and here's why. So obviously these are bigger questions, or will they simply put in banner ads around where you're typing in your query? And obviously that brings us all the way back to the days of Yahoo. So I think that, yes, there's a lot of promise. I think there's an exceptional amount of hype. Now, it's also, I think, worth highlighting that one of the worst performers in here today was Texas Instruments, and the share hasn't partaken in the rebound in artificial intelligence, and it is now starting to roll over a little in here. So it's certainly not without risk. One thing that I think is rather interesting is that the market is beginning to price in the potential that the Federal Reserve will at least skip a meeting in terms of raising interest rates. So bonds are starting to look a little bit more attractive, and the dollar was weaker today, so gold prices were a bit steadier. And I think that is very encouraging because that was a big downward dynamic we had on Friday, and we did not see downside follow through. Now, obviously, the size of today's move does not countermand the size of Friday's move, right? It's going to definitely need some upside follow through tomorrow, and most particularly, it'll have to sustain a move back up through the 2000 level. But again, that's another example of prices pausing around a big psychological level, and this is not unexpected. The big difference here is that gold prices had rallied very impressively to get to this level and have subsequently just gone sideways, and that's the upper side of a 3-year range. Apple peaked around the 200 level, pulled back, has recouped it in a very clear, fast manner. At a minimum, it's likely to consolidate in this area in a similar manner to what gold has done, but there's obviously the potential that the valuation is going to work against it. The benefit for gold is that the most likely outcome is that with slowing economic activity, with the potential that the inflationary shock is going to turn into a deflationary shock, that interest rates will start to come back down, and that will then enhance the potential that various central banks will begin to also try to cushion the fall by not only cutting interest rates but printing volumes of cash. Platinum prices were also in positive territory today and firming now from the region of the big psychological $1,000 level. Silver had been really quite overbought. It unwound a good portion of that overbought condition, and then it was well off the lows in here today. So, even very weak currencies like the South African rand were a little bit off the lows over the last few days, and then the dollar index has paused in the region of that 200-day moving average and will not be able to hold on to its gain in here today. Then, of course, we have the kind of unique characteristics of the yen, where it has been really very weak over the last month or two, and now pausing around the 140 level. But this clear desire by the central bank to devalue the currency in service to fomenting inflation is certainly helping the stock market, and the Nikkei was up nearly another 700 points in here today, and this is a very clear and sustained breakout. So there's obviously the potential now that this breakout, which is and ranges being explosions waiting to happen, is going to continue to extend and then potentially come up and test this 35,000 level, or in a best case scenario, get all the way up and test the peaks from all the way back in 1989. So certainly there is a lot of enthusiasm around the potential for Japanese equities to outperform and potentially the Japanese economy to outperform, given the big shoot of support that exporters are going to get from the devaluation of the currency. So this is very clear bullish activity. But then let's also look at what's happening in Europe. And the FTSE 250 is still holding here in this range, but has not yet been able to push back above the 200-day moving average. If this is support building, the 18,000 level will hold. Certainly, the support that the UK market has is the relative valuation with a PE of 12. 0.91, so let's call that 13, and compare it to the Russell 2000, which is around 13 on a positive PE, but the historic PE is a lot closer to 25. Now, this I think is important when we look at the Nasdaq relative to the Russell 2000. It is right in the region of its peak from back in 1999. Now we've had a lengthy consolidation in this area, and that would generally suggest that the breakout should be sustainable, but that was an extraordinary valuation for large cap versus small cap in 1999. We've had an extraordinary advance in terms of the large cap companies. I do notice that increasingly the Fangman companies are being referred to as the Fabulous Seven, but They're including Tesla and not including Netflix, which I think is a little bit of a bastardization of the initial better performers. Now, the performance of those eight companies has not got back up to test the peak just yet. It looks a lot like the wider NASDAQ 100. When we look at them relative to the total market cap of the market, well, then it doesn't look dissimilar to the performance of the NASDAQ relative to the Russell 2000. And of course, we don't have as much back history because several of these companies did not exist before about 2012. I think it is interesting, though, that Netflix has been excised from the way that that index is calculated by several investors, and the share continues to trend higher here. Now, it is overbought in the very short term, and there is certainly the potential that it can pull back further from here. The most important thing will be whether it can hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, as we think about the picture of global liquidity, I think what's happening with Bitcoin right now is rather instructive. So the price was down in a very dynamic manner today, down $1,600. And this is on the back of Binance being sued by several jurisdictions and the CEO also being sued. And some of the accusations being levied against it is that their risk control and was basically nonsensical, that they were breaking securities law, and that they facilitated Russian organizations to exchange money and move money around that which were evading sanctions. And there are at least half a dozen more where they've been running into problems with regulators in several countries. Now, the problem is that Binance accounts for more volume in the crypto market than every other exchange combined. And if they have to stop doing business, well, then that is going to curtail volume. But of course, the problem is that when you don't have interest rates, you don't have a pure use case or an essential utility for an asset, and the volume in the market decreases so significantly so quickly, then that can have a really quite severe impact on the price in the short term. And that does appear to be what is underway right now. Now, when we think about Coinbase, the one thing that Coinbase has done over the course of the last several years has been to avoid the temptation to launch its own coin or its own token. And that's one of the challenges that Binance has had, that they do have their Binance coin and they've been using that as part of their network. But the problem is that it's as soon as you issue your own token, then that's like a security. Now, it doesn't matter whether you argue it is a security or not, from the perspective of a regulator, and there are multiple regulators around the world, then only one or two of them have to decide that it's a security, and you run into trouble. And then you either have to shut down in that country, or you have to hive off that part of the business, or you lose customers, and it becomes just problematic. So Coinbase has basically avoided that way of doing business or relying on a token for its business. It does then raise the potential that it could be a beneficiary from the demise of Binance and that it will gain market share. But in the meantime, there is the potential that the share could decline much further. There is the potential that Bitcoin could decline much further. And I would remind investors that it is quite normal for prices to rally a year ahead of the halving. And At any point after that, it is quite normal for prices to decline and test the lows for Bitcoin before the halving, and that you don't generally get the big move higher until after the halving. And the halving isn't going to be until April of 2024. So we are right inside the window where there could be significant weakness in Bitcoin prices. And it will be a while before the limited supply argument starts to become apparent once more. And I suspect that by the time we get around to that next limited supply argument, then the global economy probably will be primed for lower interest rates, more liquidity being provided. And there will be other exchanges will appear that will capture that market share, but it looks like Coinbase at least might be a survivor. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.